racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Good evening and welcome to Inside Motorsport as we get set for another big week here on Triple SFM and across the internet. And we'll look forward to, in the very near future, to hear more about cat racing and, of course, the race of 1,000 years getting underway in the old Adelaide Grand Prix circuit is going to be a big one, and we'll be looking forward to giving you plenty of information as that all gets closer as time comes to hand. But, of course, the racing all started up there at Phillip Island today, in fact, and the man who was covering it for us was Neville Wilkinson. He's on the line live from Phillip Island, Neville Wilkinson. Neville, you've foregone the trip across the Nullarbor to stay with the V8 at the island, and an interesting kickoff to the year 2000.
Definitely. Well, it was an interesting, not just the new year, but a new format for V8 Supercar. I mean, usually we're used to the three-race format on Sunday. Phillip Island, they're trying something new. A race on Saturday, and a race on Sunday, each of 45 minutes with a compulsory pit stop. So it was quite an interesting mix this weekend.
And of course, for a number of instances, first time out for a number of new cars and driver combinations, team combinations as well.
Most definitely. The probably the ones people were keeping their eyes on were Brad Jones in the Ozymal Falcon, and also Paul Morris in the big Kev, I'm excited, Commodore.
Thanks very much. Good morning, Australia.
Oh, mate. And Big Kev was here too. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it makes it interesting, doesn't it, you know, when we see these sponsors coming. But the beauty is, what we're seeing are some sponsors who are not what you'd call mainstream automotive or auto industry sponsors coming in. We've got people like, you know, Ozymal, Big Kev and the like, who are coming because they're seeing the value of sponsoring motorsport.
Well, most definitely. I mean, I was talking with a few of the commentators last night about Ozymal, as a matter of fact, and it's good to see that it's a non-motorsporting company getting in, and you're going to see V8 Supercar with the Adelaide and Canberra this year. These big events, they're going to attract different sponsors, and that's good to see for the sport in a whole.
Now, in terms of the racing, as you say, there was a race on Saturday, a race on Sunday. It does give the teams a bit of time to fix things and change things. I believe yesterday the weather was not the greatest there at Phillip Island. They had the four seasons in the one day, but how was it today?
Sunny, very windy, but sunny all day. You were right, yesterday it was four seasons. You had a short sleeve shirt on and then you froze. And it rained and everything, like, it was just the way it was. But the big news this weekend with the race format was each team was only allowed 10 tyres, so that's like 2.5 sets of tyres, and a 45 minute race around Phillip Island. Some teams just tear off like the proverbial rabbit, and they just tore up their tyres. I mean, the Kmart team particularly had big problems with their tyres. They were blistering the right rear, as a matter of fact, and that the compulsory pit stops gave them the opportunity to come and change tyres. But come today, like some teams yesterday were putting on 8 tyres yesterday, so they only had 2 good tyres for the whole race today, and so there was a lot of teams with tyre problems. So I mean, there's a few rumblings going on, a few people weren't happy. I mean, John Faulkner, for instance, spun his car yesterday in qualifying and wrecked, totally demolished 4 tyres. So he had 6 tyres for 2 45-minute races.
Yeah, of course, there's probably not the situation where they are then allowed to find 4 equivalent old wear tyres.
Well, John Faulkner actually had to do that. He'd used his 6 tyres yesterday, and the tyres were so bad he wasn't even allowed to use one of those tyres, though all 6 of them were had it. And he actually had to start... He finished 10th yesterday, and he had to finish on the back of the grid because he'd put 4 of his Bathurst tyres on. These are used tyres from last year to finish the race, and he had to do that whole race on those 4 tyres. His pit stop was basically come in, to take the wheels off, lime on the ground, and then put the wheels back on the car, and that was his pit stop. And he went from something like 36th on the grid to 14th. And his tyres were great because he paced himself today, where yesterday they were going, like I said, they were going like scum cats yesterday.
Yeah. The thing I noticed actually, there was a couple of times when they were showing the pit stops that they were doing where they were working out obviously what tyres had received the worst wear. And one car I particularly noticed was one of the Dick Johnson Racing Falcons. They took the fronts off, put them on the ground, picked them up, put them back on, but they put new tyres on the rear. So obviously the rears were working more, the fronts were doing okay. So, you know, teams were sort of mixing and matching to get the best out of the tyres. And as you say, Phillip Island does kill tyres.
Especially the right rear. The right rear, most teams having trouble with the right rear, they were just blistering really bad. But also, the other problem with Phillip Island is if your car's understeering, you kind of got it on full lock, and Mark Scaife was explaining yesterday, you've got it on full lock, and then what happens is, you go slower into the turn, but by going slower into the turn, you're boofing it more out of the turn, so your wheel's spinning more out of the turn, so then what happens is you're standing up or whatever, so it all comes on, you got a good idea who was the good drivers and who weren't such good drivers.
Mm. And the driver who can drive clean and smooth and put the power down so that he doesn't grind up the tyres, chew them up, is like the driver's going to end up being more towards the front of the field at the end of the day because their tyres are staying better and last longer.
They shone through, those guys shone through. Glenn Seaton was a notable, kept his car clean, he had his consistent times all day. He wasn't super fast, but then the race came back to him and he was the fastest guy in the end. Same with Craig Baird, who won today in the second race, and basically it was kind of like today was a continuation of yesterday's race because of the tyre situation. So and Craig Baird came through for a Stone Brothers winner, and I mean, you know, I didn't expect Craig Baird to win and I didn't expect HRT to lose personally.
Well, the thing is, of course, that if you look at yesterday's results, it was like deja vu to last year. Once again, Craig Lowndes, Mark Scaife up there with Garth Tander in between them. But then today, the story changed. Craig Lowndes didn't finish. His engine or something similar went bang.
The engine, had an engine problem. So there was steam coming out of the engine. He just had to pull it over to the side. Didn't even finish. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And of course, but at the end, the man who won out is a fellow who showed a lot of promise in the second half of last season, Garth Tander, and I'd say that could be the dark horse team for this year.
Definitely. Garth kept his head. He had 2 second finishes yesterday and today, and basically he accumulated points. He finished on 108 points, and Mark Scaife had 2 third places, so he finished on 102. That's first and second. And then Craig Baird came through for third. He finished on 93 points. Then there was Glenn Seaton. Just consistent. He finished 6th yesterday after stalling it on the grid, and then today he finished 4th, and he's on 90 points. And then 5th is, Paul Radicic, and he finished on 87, so that was the top 5. And then rounding out the top 10 was Mark Larkham, Craig Lowndes, Stephen Richards, Todd Kelly, and John Faulkner and his Make-A-Wish Foundation Signature Racing Cummins Commodore finished the top 10 after starting on the back of the grid today. So it was an interesting race weekend. Don't know about the phrase format was the best, but it was an experiment, and they had to try it. They wanted to mix it up, and they didn't want the same sprint race format. So it was an interesting experiment. We'll find out how well they went when they count the spectator figures and the dollars, I suppose.
One thing I will ask you, there was supposedly occurring down there at Phillip Island this weekend a hearing into Gibson Motorsport apparently supposedly breaching the testing rules with some testing down at Mangalore. Did they have any results of that?
From what I haven't heard anything about it. I've talked to some journalists and to me they're saying that no, there's been no penalty incurred. And I mean, people, I've talked to a few people and there's arguments, well, was it a racetrack? It's an airstrip, you know, so I don't know. You know, are you allowed to go on an airstrip and test starts? I mean, is that regarded as practicing at a track or a circuit? I'm not too sure. I mean, okay, they hold motor carnas there, but that's as much as I know about the airfield that they were at.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to wrap it up there. Thanks very much for having a chat to us today about what's happening down there at Phillip Island, and that it will be in contact with you over the next few weeks.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, so definitely things happening down there at Phillip Island. It's actually interesting to see some of the support. One of the things that's occurred recently is the fact that Ford has now announced the fact they've got 10 teams that they'll be backing this year as part of their idea of getting Ford racing much more up front in terms of the V8 supercar category. And this year, picking up support from Ford are the Cat Racing car of John Bauer, Aussie Mail Internet Racing, Brad Jones, Greenfield Mars Racing, Karen McLean, Super Cheap Auto Racing, Steve Ellery, K&J Thermal Racing of Paul Wheel, And you've got the two-car Ford Tickford Racing Team, Seaton and Crompton, two-car Shell Helix Racing Team, Renault Citroen Johnson, Stone Brothers Racing, Baird and Longhurst. Of course, Longhurst this week showing off his new Caltex Havoline scheme and sponsorship, and Moto10 Racing for Mike Lycum. So basically, Ford has stepped up the battle in terms of the touring car category here in Australia and showing much more support for the competitors to try and bring on the same level pegging as for Holden.
Joining us on the line is the re-crowned Australian champion, Gary Brazier. Gary, congratulations. A great performance down there at Speedway City.
Yeah, thanks for that. It was a special opportunity for myself to win an Australian title that my dad won 20 years before me.
It is always interesting to see how second generation drivers do approach the sport, and with so much history and background, I guess it was inevitable that you were going to take up the wheel.
Yeah, definitely, you know, like I can remember, I mean, as far back as when you can start remembering that I was always around the racetrack and always said that I wanted to do what my dad done, and, you know, I grew up around the likes of Gary Rush and seen him and my dad run a school to wheel and really enjoyed it, and now that, you know, I've got that opportunity to do it with Brooke and Gary and Gary Jr., yeah, it's just a great thrill to be out there racing for something that I've always wanted to do.
Mm. Over the years, you've gone from racing just about every race meeting that ever happened now to becoming a bit more selective. And I was talking to some people on Monday who said to me, you know, you've got to love that Gary Brazier. He just goes out there and just beats them and then puts the car in the trailer and then we don't see him for another 3 months and then he comes out and does it again. Is that intentional on your part, or is it just the way the cards have fallen over the last couple of years?
Well, I guess just for the last few years, I guess it's just been inevitable. Like, I've out of all the young blokes that I started racing with, I'm the only one with a young family. I guess when you say family sort of are supposed to come first, and I've put mine in that priority. Just for racing a few times here and there, well, the sport is an expensive sport nowadays, and I think if you want to do it properly, you're better off racing a selected few with the most money you can in them selected few, rather than drag the money out and do 40 shows and not win none.
It is a fairly cut and thrust affair, and with what we have seen lately, you came out with the new car, a lot of people putting a whole big chunk of money on getting that Australian title, and of course Max Dumsny had some refound vigour at Speedway City on the weekend.
Oh yeah, you know, I honestly believe I haven't seen Max be so dominative in you know, the last 3 or 4 years. You know, Max is probably the most I've ever, apart from my dad, looked up to, as in my driving style. I've always approached my racing by watching Max, because I believe in the early or late 80s, early 90s that he was the best high runner there was in the country, and I sort of set my goals, and you know, I ran into the tyres a couple of times at Parramatta trying to learn how to run that high line, but you know, after a few years you get used to it, and I think once you get your first couple of wins, the wins do seem to follow on. But you know, over the years, I think you know, for Max not being so dominative, I think he's always been there in a consistent way. He's always won, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 shows a year, and we've sort of done the same sort of thing.
I would imagine now that you're out there cleaning off the tail tank and getting ready for the sign rider, because next weekend I'm sure you're going to want to be displaying Australia 1 when you go chasing 50 grand.
Well, I wouldn't be too sure. I don't know. I think we're going to be going out there with the 21 car. You know, I've got a, I don't know, it's pretty hard for me. I'm sort of more devoted to my 21 number than I am really the number one number. I know that the one is the, I guess it's the most prestigious race you can win in Australia, and to have that number one on your car is, or for anybody, it's a big thrill. But you know, with that 21 number, I feel a lot more at home, and I'm using that number for a good reason. We don't know. I'm sure we're going to have the one on there pretty soon, but for the 50,000, I think we'll go with the 21.
Mm. It is going to be an interesting show for everyone there, and for all the drivers in particular. With that much money, do you think a lot of people who are normally quite calm and sedate into the first turn, do you think they're all going to have the red mist come down a bit sooner?
No, I don't. I really don't believe that. No, I think all of it's just all hype. I know 50,000. It's the biggest check we've ever seen in Australia. But no, I think everyone will go. Everyone wants to finish, and you can't win races on the first lap. We showed that the other night by Max led to 34 out of the 40, and you know, I took my time and hoping for that one opportunity to pass Max, and he slipped up and made a little mistake and I took that opportunity. I think the same will happen here at Parramatta, that you run second, like, you're going to give it your all, but I don't believe that running into someone and tearing some cars up is worth the 50,000, because you'll lose more than 50 if you start doing that. And you know, I really think the 50,000 is a great prize money and a great race, but down the line I don't think it's it won't last if it doesn't start paying down the line, because for 50 for first and 5 for second, 3 for third, 2 for fourth and 1,000 for fifth, it doesn't give much incentive to turn up, because there's only 5 guys that's won races in the last 10 years, and them 5 guys are the only 5 guys that are going to be in there for that 50.
Now, you have done a lot of travelling across Australia with Sprint Car Racing, and of course one sad venue to see close. Has there been any talk of the Claremont promotion taking you over there?
It's funny you mention that. Yeah, I guess after you win an Australian title, they all want you back again. And you know, that one year we ran Claremont and Bunbury 7 times all in the same year. We done a lot of trips across the Nullarbor, and you know, we had 7 straight wins there. So I haven't been back there since. Like, I went back there for a couple of World Series races, and but yeah, no, it's a shame that a great speedway like that is going to close. But for all them West Australian guys, like, they're not going to have a sanctioned place to race at every week. But I hear they're putting in a new speedway for themselves, and Clyde Migro and all the people associated with him, I'm sure they'll do a good job and get a new adventure running.
And of course, Parramatta is a lot different track to Speedway City. Are you going to have to do a lot of changing to get the car up to spec for the bigger, more open racetrack?
Oh, no, definitely not. Parramatta's a little bit different for Speedway City, of course, but Parramatta, you can run around the outside, where the other night, like, even at Speedway City, I think it's one of the good tracks in Australia. There's only, well, it's pretty hard. I mean, you can be biased to each, everyone's got their own opinions, but I think there's really only 3 good racetracks in Australia, and Parramatta and Speedway City and Warrnambool are definitely those 3. Mount Gambier come close, but no, Parramatta's a place where you can run high or low, and most of the time that the winner comes to the guy that's running high, and there's a lot of places you can pass, where a lot of tracks you could be 2 seconds a lap slower, and you can still block that guy from behind with it to stop him from passing you. So no, I definitely think Parramatta is a place where it stops all the blockers, and it puts the men up the front.
And of course, with a lot of the younger drivers that have that started around the same time as you, a lot of them have set their sights for America. Skip Jackson, Brooke Catnell too, especially, that have been doing some work over there. You never got bitten by the bug to try and race in the States?
I think I was there about 5 years before all them guys thought about going. I've been racing in America since 1990, and I've done about probably 200,000 or 300,000 more miles before they turned up. We spent plenty of hours and plenty of hours driving around America, going from race to race with the Outlaws, and we were first to do the Outlaws and first to do the Pennsylvania circuit. Knoxville's a good starting ground for a lot of guys, and once you go from there, you've got to, it's good to see Skip this year going to Pennsylvania to basically, Pennsylvania will teach you how to drive a lot harder, a lot tougher, and I think it will make Skip definitely a better driver and a lot more competitive. But if we're going to America, it's a bit hard for me now. I've got a young family. I've got to look at what I'm going to do for them, and going to America is a hard life out on that road, and if you're not willing to put 100% in, I don't think you should go. So right now, the opportunity, when it does arise, and I've got that like a motorhome and stuff like that, and I can support my family well and give them the best comfort possible, well, that's when I'll probably do it again.
Well, Gary, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. Congratulations. The Australian title, they don't give out them very lightly, and I know a lot of people were cheering when they heard the result coming back over East on Saturday night.
Yeah, well, yeah, it is very difficult to win an Australian title. You know, we've got four now. I'm still going for that goal of beating Gary Rush's of 10, even though it's an Australian title is probably worth twice the amount as it was back then. But you know, I think if we can pass that 10, I'm sure I've set my goals high and we'll come away with it.
Gary Brazier there joining us on the line, and of course we were talking about the $50,000 show. Real disappointment for everyone who made their way up to Parramatta this week, as we have seen rain spoiling last night's $50,000 show. They got through all the qualifying heats on Friday, and Saturday night come to the A Main for the big show, and of course the heavens opened, and they called it off at the latest possible moment, which really did make spoil it in some respects, because they also lost the C7 live television coverage as a result of the rain. So a real disappointment there, but we look forward to seeing how the sprint cars head off next, of course, with Skip Jackson, all the Americans that were there, and Brooke Tatnall heading back over to the United States today. It does mean that basically the big end of the sprint car season is closing up, and well, as we mentioned before, the speed car, well, as we're going to mention in the very near future, the speed car season is coming towards its climax as well. Still to come on the show, Dale Jarrett, Ricky Rudd and Mike Skinner, three of the men that have pushed the envelope for qualifying in the Daytona 500, and we also take a look at a Rally of Sweden, Colin.
Yes, and the Rally of Sweden is always a rally that is one that will give great competition, particularly in the icy and snowy conditions. And the word we have as of the finish of the special stages yesterday, it was Gronholm in the Peugeot 206 who was in the lead, leading to the final day's activities, which would be later today in Australia time. But in other interesting news from overseas this week, the fact that the British Touring Car Championship looks set to start its season later than planned originally, and in a clash with the fixture dates for the British Grand Prix. The first round of the meeting of the British Touring Car Championship is being set for Donington Park on the Easter weekend, with the races being on the Monday, practice on the Sunday. Of course, what's happening that same weekend elsewhere is the British Grand Prix, which will be running on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. However, they said that they expect that it shouldn't be too much of a problem, because where the two circuits are, Brands Hatch and Donington, are reasonably close, which means people can have their British Grand Prix on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then whip across to Donington for their British Touring Car Championship opening round on the Sunday with the new Class B for the production cars, super production cars. So that's looking good and very interesting for them. Of course, they do have a problem, the fact that they will have a clash with one of the rounds for the National Saloon Car Championship in the 9th of April meeting, which means they have to do a bit of planning there to sort of get things sorted out.
Joining us on the line on Inside Motorsport, Fertil Klaren, who is the clerk of the course of the Swedish Rally, coming into day three today, and it has been a very interesting Rally of Sweden. The ice and snow on the road making it particularly treacherous for all the drivers.
Yes, it is. But we are very lucky that the surface on the roads, they are more or less pure ice. I would say perhaps 85% of it is ice and snow. And today during the night there have been minus degrees up in the forest and some snow. So I think at least the last stages of the rally would be a little white background for all of foreign photographers.
The other thing with this event, traditionally it has always been a tough one, but Peugeot just having a fantastic run here in what has really been a comeback season for them.
Yes, I think the car and the driver in the Swedish rally is a perfect mix. Marcus Grönholm is very, very good on the surface. You know, in Finland they also have the similar conditions during winter, and they are running on the same studded tires. I mean, so he's really good on this surface, and this car seems to be absolutely fantastic on these conditions.
The other thing that has surprised me so far with this event is Toyota. Although not a factory entry, has been really doing it a lot better than some of the more notable entries like your Fords and Sayat and the like.
Yes, I think it's a little about the same with the Swede Thomas Rådström. He's also very well known and done this event, I think it's 10 times. And I know that Toyota has put together a new car and the latest specification that they had before they decided not to continue. So I think he has as good cars as anybody else, and he's a good driver as well, so that's why he's up in the top.
I would imagine you're not far away from recommencing with the I think four special stages today before the finish.
Yes, it's about 100k special stage to go, and they will start the first stage this morning in about half an hour, so it's going to be very excited to see what happened on the final, because it's so very close, perhaps not up to Marcus, but the other four is very close together, and I'm sure there will be some changes in their positions.
Really, for Marcus now, he just has to take it just consistently and even, because he has got a good lead going into today.
Yes, but on the other hand, he is first, and since we have some snow up in the forest, it's not so easy for him to get the brake points, and the cars coming behind could follow his tracks and see where he brakes and feel a little if they could hold out a little longer before they brake. So I think the snow up there put the pressure on Marcus, even if it's not much snow, but at least it makes some problems for him to choose the racing line, because so the zero cars don't have that kind of line as the rally cars does.
Perhaps if you could just run through the top five standings as you go into the final day today. Thanks, Bertel.
Okay. You want me to repeat the
standings? Yes, please.
Okay, then I must find a computer and update myself. Sorry for that.
No, that's all right. And it has made for some great pictures we've seen down here in Australia. The snow has really looked good with the cars, and the Peugeot Silver also looking fantastic on the snow. And hopefully that's a sign that Peugeots will be coming back strong throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think, and also it's good for rally sport if Peugeot would take this win, and it will boost the rest of the season for, I mean, the interest for the rally championship will be very, very high.
Yes. All right, hopefully you've got to the computer now.
As a matter of fact, my computer was not working. I'm in the race control, so I hold on, I see if I could get the standings, how it looks this morning. I asked some of my...
No worries at all. You've got to love live radio.
Yeah, live radio is fantastic. He started with Marcus, and this morning he was 26.5 seconds ahead of Tommy Mäkinen, and Colin McRae is 3.1 seconds behind Mäkinen, and Rådström on fourth is another 6.8 seconds behind, and Richard Burns on the fifth place is 6.5 after Rådström. So among those four, it would be a real tough day.
Well, Bertel Klarén, I appreciate you taking the time out and speaking to us down here in Australia, and we wish you all the best for the final day.
Thank you very much.
Bertel Klarén there, joining us from Rally of Sweden, clerk of the course, taking the time out to have a chat with us here on Inside Motorsport. Only, 20 minutes now till they kick off on the final day of round two of the World Rally Championship. Joining us is a man who's just seen the completion of the GTP Championship. Chris Nixon, welcome back for 2000.
Thank you very much, Craig. Good afternoon to everybody.
And it was Jim Richards in the Maguire's car once again out in front.
Yeah, what's new? Well, Jimmy Richards, 3 out of 3 on the first appearance for 2000 of the new era of the GTP cars, Craig. The story of this weekend possibly even is not the fact that Jim won both 12-lap races yesterday plus today's Century Batteries GTP one-hour showroom shootout, but that the series organisers, Procar Australia, announced a new series for the year 2000 to be called the GTP Nations Cup. This weekend, of course, was not a championship round, Craig. It was a pre-season curtain raiser, GTP proper, starting at
at Barbagallo Raceway in Perth on March the 19th for the Century Batteries Australian GT Production Car Championship. And on the weekend of this sensational Adelaide 500 in April, we will see the start of the new GTP Nations Cup, a very exciting new category.
And this year, with the changes in the rules, it's going to open it up a little bit more to a lot more competitors. And whilst we did see Jim Richards today at the front, we should see pretty soon a lot more cars running a lot closer together.
We will. Nations Cup is a GT production category, but there will be some parity adjustments to the cars, Craig. So there are 21 individual models so far approved for eligibility. And they include cars such as a supercharged Honda NSX, a Jaguar XKR, which normally people will know comes only with an automatic transmission, but which will be allowed to run a manual transmission for the purposes of racing in Australia, possibly a 5.5 litre Mercedes-Benz CLK Coupe. Somebody is building a 4.7 litre V8 BMW Z3 Roadster hardtop. There are just some fantastic cars. Of course, Jimmy Richards will be the leader of the Porsche Brigade in his GT3. I think there are up to 8 of those cars expected in the new series. 6 Dodge Vipers are eligible, and there are 4 new cars built to the ACR specification currently being built on firm order from Australia at the moment in the USA. The Vipers will come down to Australia. Listeners will be pleased to know, with a new brake package that will give them some stoppers to match their goers in the V10 engines. So it's a very, very exciting new class of racing happening.
Yeah, we believe that some of the guys have been down to the States doing their shopping after Daytona, looking at some of the winning cars there, and obviously looking at the competition with those Vipers, which did clean up fairly comprehensively at Daytona.
You're right, Colin. I think the most exciting thing is that what Nations Cup will do will effectively be to give Australia its own version of GT racing. We'll see the Vipers, as I said. We'll see a flock of GT3s. We saw the debut this weekend of Ross Palmer's new Ferrari F360 Modena Challenge car. That's a special lightweight racing version of the Ferrari F360 to replace the F355. We will see the supercharged saline Mustang, 3 supercharged Honda NSXs, the Jaguar, as I said, the Mercedes-Benz, as I said, Supras, the Chevy Corvette. Just a fantastic array of really super performance exotic cars running in a field. I don't think we've ever had a competition like this in Australia before.
Mm. And of course, with such a range of exotic cars, I suppose there's much more opportunity there for some of the local manufacturers and dealers to get their fingers involved in the championship, get themselves involved. The other thing is, of course, with that type of range of cars, you've actually probably got what would probably be one of the best support packages possible for the race of 1,000 years in Adelaide end of the year.
Well, that's a hopeful idea as well, I guess. There are no firm plans in that area yet, but the organisers of the championship are looking for two venues for the final two rounds of the Nations Cup series, so we'll see what develops there.
Oh, just before we go, I just told Colin to wrap this up, but I just remembered, speaking to some people up there in Queensland, it was interesting to hear that although Volvo have pulled out of racing Australia, Shepherd's are still quite actively campaigning for a sponsor for those two cars to run in the Super Touring cars this year.
Well, that'll be a surprise. It'd be very interesting indeed if that were to occur.
Okay, nothing we can say at that.
That's all the comment I can offer, Craig.
Okay, then.
Oh, I wish we could see those guys back. I reckon there'd be a few people who'd have some fun in those Volvos.
Oh, yes, I think so. That would be very interesting indeed. I know that that George would be very keen to see them run.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't win the $12 million super draw last night on Tats Lotto. Otherwise, I know I'd be putting some money.
Cole, I don't think you could. I don't think you'd get a more exciting car than that that 2 litre Volvo Super Tourer. I think that's still, to use a slightly crude expression, the duck stuts when it comes to touring cars in this country.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for your time this evening, Chris Nixon, and no doubt we'll be talking to you after the next round of the GTP and GT cars at the next round.
It will, in fact, be the opening round, Cole. So we look forward to talking to you from Barbagallo Raceway. on March the 19th. Thank you, Colin, and good night, Alan. Craig.
Thanks very much to Chris Nixon joining us there. We mentioned about NASCAR Winston Cup. Well, it is qualifying weekend, and it's interesting to see that Jarrett and Rudd have taken the front row for the 500. Robert Yates Racing, of course, starting 1-2 in the season opener at the Daytona 500. And the man who is on the pole, two-time Daytona 500 winner, Dale Jarrett, spoke to the press after his run.
We didn't know how fast we could actually go. It's not that we've been late. We just never have blocked the car off. All the runs that we've been making have been with a substantial amount of opening on the front end. So we weren't sure how quick it could go. The guys tuned the engine up. And, you know, when you get into a situation where you're not sucking the cars down like we were before with the shocks and making all of that difference. When you get into pure horsepower and aerodynamics, I have the best right there in Todd Parrott and then Doug and Robert Yates and our entire engine shop. I was a little surprised that the first lap was as quick as they told me because I ran a little bit higher than what I had been. But I could tell whenever I took off that they'd tuned things up a little bit and the car was running very smooth. And the second lap, I hit every mark that I was trying to get at and didn't have to make an effort to turn the wheel to do that. And when you don't have to do that, there's going to be some speed there.
The man off beside him will start, in fact, on pole position in the 125 qualifying races, although the front row, as we have told you years over the years, that the two men starting on the pole of the 125 qualifiers are, in fact, automatic entries into the race. But that is his Dale Jarrett's teammate, Ricky Rudd.
I really thought we had a shot at running a flat. I knew that we could run a flat. For some reason, we just didn't do it when it counted. And, you know, these motors are very fragile. They built for qualifying. And I don't know if maybe we got the oil a little bit too hot. And I know when I left pit road, the car cockpit filled up with smoke. I'm not so sure we might have hurt the motor just a little bit. But, you know, Dale ran a super lap. We've been trading a little information all week long, and that's been working super. If we couldn't win the pole, you know, I couldn't be happier to see our teammate there win it. And, you know, the whole Yates organization, the motors come out of the same shop, and a lot of effort went into this week and the whole season so far. And like I say, the biggest thing for me is just it's great to have the opportunity to sit behind the wheel of this thing.
Well, Ricky Rudd speaking there, and, well, Peter Norton, our man down there at the Daytona 500, has been reveling because unlike here in Australia, the Fords have been dominating. But the one man who prevented the Chevys being shut out of that top five was the fourth fastest qualifier, Mike Skinner.
The wind died down for us, and we put some snake oil in that thing. We put some trick stuff in there that we tried at Talladega, and it never made a lap. It blew up, and we did some different things with the heat and so on and so forth in it, and we knew the Monte Carlo was really going to struggle, and so we really gambled, and it paid off good for us. Those were changes that we made right before qualifying. We knew that we was not no way going to make the top 20, and I think we were like 19th or 20th or something like that in yesterday's practice, and we knew that we wasn't going to make the race, and if we crashed or something happened in the 125, we was going to be dependent on a provisional starting place, and we said, you know, we're not going to sit on the pole anyway. We might as well gamble, and so we tried to deal with the oil, and we got away with it.
You've got to love the Americans. We put some snake oil in that thing. Great stuff from Mike Skinner. But for the fans of the Pontiacs, the Tacoma fastest man was Ward Burton in sixth position, one of three in the top ten. And it's 365 days, Lesmo, until we see the Dodge out there.
Oh, dear. Away we go again for another season. But in other news happening around the world, there are interesting reports coming out from overseas indicate that Renault is taking a close look at its opportunity to get back into Formula One as a Formula One team owner. The most likely team that could be taken over by Renault if they do get back into Formula One is Benetton, who won the Constructors' World title in 96 with Michael Schumacher as their lead driver. It's been understood that Renault has been interested in the way that things have gone with Ford's takeover of Stewart and turning it into Jaguar, and the fact that now Daimler Chrysler has taken a 40% interest in McLaren, taking over a fair bit of the Tag McLaren group there, that's sort of pushing them towards that situation. And the word as well that very likely this could be Peugeot's last year as a Formula One engine supplier. So we'll keep you posted. Things happen there. Mentioning Prost, they had their launch recently, and once again the information highway, super highway, has continued with its sponsorship, with the Prost team coming out with their usual tobacco advertising, etc., and Bic and Agfa, etc., from France, but also appearing on the side pods quite prominently, the internet supplier Yahoo. At the same time, with McLaren having their rollout for their new MP415, again, Computer Associates, Fujitsu, Siemens, again, high technology appearing on the cars, and as well this week, Ferrari showing off their new Ferrari, the car they reckon that, once again, this is their year.
The 2000 Formula Ford season kicks off. Joining us on the line, Kylie Mavis. Kylie, a very exciting start to the championship year with a lot of new drivers making their name, as a few of the older drivers have cleared out, and with Liam Ferrier, Owen Kelly, Stuart Costera all coming back again, it's going to prove to be a pretty tough season.
Yes, well, today's racing was truly spectacular. Leanne Ferrier actually made history today. She is the first woman to win not only a race, but a round of the Australian Formula Ford Championship. So, what a record breaker we have in our midst. It's fantastic to see, and obviously Valvoline's really happy about it because Garth won in V8 today. So, happy all round, I think, and I think it's especially good for the sport to have a woman up there, and pushing it also helps promotion with the category.
Yeah, it has been a pretty interesting season for a lot of the women in Australian motorsport. They launched their calendar at the end of last year, and then every single one of them has seemed to go on and push the envelope on the racetrack as well.
Yeah, it just shows that women do take motorsport seriously, and Leanne has never ever played on, on a female aspect. She's very serious in what she does, and if anyone looks at her in any other light than a racer, she will obviously give you a look the other way, because she is a seriously committed young individual. I mean, 19. And she's actually got a state champion gymnastics title to her name as well. So she's a very talented all-round, I think.
Mm. All right. Now, young driver who's made his way up from the karting ranks, Nick Agland. He was actually the fastest on Friday's qualifying.
Yes, he was very fast. And I spoke to a lot of the drivers, and they said that he had a bit of a toe down the straight. Ferrier would have taken pole, but he was very, very fast, and I think he just has a good slipstream.
Well, Kylie, a very, tremendous start to the 31st season of Formula Ford Racing here in Australia, and with some of the discussions that are going on with Howard Marsden and the Formula Ford people, it could be the last of its current format.
2002 is the date that the new category is being implemented, and we actually had discussions about it here today, and the journalists all talking to Howard about it, and he's very positive about the future of it, and nothing has actually been released as yet about what's happening to the cars, but that should be, I think, released and all out to the public in the near future. Hopefully by mid-season we should know a little bit more about what's going to happen to the cars in the future and the ones that we currently run. Everyone's very curious about what's going to happen, but they also, I guess the current drivers are probably looking a little bit more forward. They've got hopes in obviously lights or V8s and maybe even overseas, so I guess they're not too concerned in that respect, but the people who are wanting to get into it in the future are, so we'll see what happens there.
All right then. Well, thanks very much for your time, Colin. We look forward to chatting with you right throughout the season of the Formula Fords. Of course, you're sharing some races with the V8s and some races with the V8 Lights this year.
That's correct. Our next race is actually at the Grand Prix, so it'll be exciting down there with all the hype of all the international drivers. So we look forward to it.
Leanne Ferrier joins us on the line now, and you are the lady at the moment, Leanne, with a sensational win today. The first lady to win a Formula Ford race in 31 years. It's not a bad record to pick up.
No, I'm very happy with it.
Your career as a racer, this is your second year on the Formula Ford Championship trail, but obviously started off in karting?
Yes, that's right. I started karting when I was about 13 or 14.
Developed on from there, as I quickly grab your bio out of last year's season program. And last year probably gave you the opportunity to get used to the tracks, and now you're really starting to kick on from there.
Yeah, well, that's right. We raced all these tracks last year, so we've got a lot of information on car setup and the technique that you need for each track. So, yeah, I think it's definitely given me a bit of help there.
Yeah, last year running with the Western Australian Fastlane team, is that all staying the same for this season?
Yes, I'm still running with the Fastlane team this year, but I've also been backed by Valvoline Cummins, so that's really good.
And, of course, teammates Garth Panda taking our victory there.
Yeah, that was just excellent. It was a good weekend.
Phillip Island is your favourite track, so getting the victory here would just top off what has been a great start to the season for you.
Yeah, well, that's right. I really didn't expect to win like this weekend. I expected to have to fight for it a little bit more, but, yeah, I'm very happy with it all.
Now, in previous years, a number of the Valvoline-backed Formula 4 drivers have ended up getting themselves a supercar drive at Bathurst at the end of the year. Is that one of your hopes, if you can keep up the performance during this season?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, I will be looking to do something like that at the end of this year or perhaps next year, but at the moment I think I'm just going to concentrate on trying to win the Formula 4 championship.
Now, by all reports, you were just jaded at the line where Nick Adlin managed to get fastest time off you as well.
Was that for qualifying?
For qualifying, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually Luke Yeldon, yeah, that got pole position. But, I was a bit slower than him in the second qualifying session, but I wasn't that worried because I knew that I'd be able to do the times.
And, of course, back in a Van Diemen again this year?
Yes, that's right. It's 94 Van Diemen, but the front's been modified, the front suspension. So I think that's improved the car a lot.
All right, and you'll be looking forward to going as the series leader off to the Melbourne Grand Prix for the next round of the championship.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be good.
Leanne Ferrier, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you. Congratulations on today, and we look forward to seeing how you progress right throughout the season 2000.
Thank you very much.
And moving on from there, some other news this week is the fact that Super Touring Champion Paul Morris will receive sponsorship from Mount Cotton Winery, Mount Cotton Estate Winery, for his defence of his Super Touring Champion title this year. The Mount Cotton Estate Winery made their first appearance on the car at the Bathurst 500 last year, the rain-soaked race that Paul Morris eventually won. But he's happy with the fact that he's got that sponsorship. But nothing seen from BMW.
Well, an exciting time for speedcar fans as we see the Australian Grand Prix taking place at Claremont Speedway. Of course, we've already mentioned on the show about this being the last season of Speedway at Claremont. But Con Migro, you have got the speedcar fellas over there at the moment, and plenty of exciting action happening last Friday night. And Tom Watson managing to get Australia-wide television coverage for you. Unfortunately, the reason for that was a spectacular fire. Hopefully he can get that car back together so we can see him in the AGP next weekend.
Well, good afternoon, Craig. Yes, Tommy Watson Sr. is okay. In fact, he started in the final of the West Australian Speedcar title, which was won by Michael Figlamini, who has won now six of those. But unfortunately for Watson, he didn't do very well. He had a couple of burns to his hand. But I'm sure that next week and the week after he'll be fit as a Mallee Bull, as they say, the side of the world.
Of course, Tom's son, Tom Jr., had a nasty accident, I think, two seasons ago now. How has he been faring?
Well, he helped his father on a Friday night, but I think time's running out for the young guy, and I'm not sure if he'll ever get behind the wheel of a racing car again, which is very sad because it robbed not only Western Australia, but the country of one of the real genuine talents we had in the sport.
Mm. I know that Tom Senior's daughter too was quite a good peddler herself, but not seen too much these days behind the wheel.
No, young Renee was a very good peddler. She won a feature race at Claremont, and I know some men that raced a lifetime and never won a feature race at Claremont. But she got married and she's pursuing other endeavours in life. She passed a degree in journalism at the University of Western Australia, and now she seems to be quite happily married. But I think the accident of Tom Junior really upset the whole family, and I don't think that Tom Senior could have ever faced his wife if another one of his children was to receive the injury similar to what happened to young Tom.
Mm. All right, this next weekend, though, is a Well, it's a race close to a lot, I know, our family's heart. The AGP, it was considered at one stage the Australian Championship in the years where Australian Championships were fought over long tracks, short tracks, and a number of other ways. And really, in the early days, you had an Australian Championship for about three or four different types of venue. The Australian Grand Prix, though, was always held only once a year, and it has a tally board of winners which really does justice to the Australian and world speedcar scene. Tattersall's on there, Freeman, and a whole host of other drivers, of course, Tatnall's and Mackay's, and you basically rush winning it. At the last time, it was at the Sydney Showground, and maybe a name like that will be featured on the winner board next weekend.
Well, not next weekend, it's the weekend after. Next week is the Laurie Matthews Speedcar Classic. But being West Australians and very open, we have invited the Sydney drivers and one Kiwi to come to Perth a week early to contest the Laurie Matthews Classic, stay a week, race the Australian Speedcar Grand Prix, then down to Bunbury for the Bunbury Grand Prix on the 26th, so three very exciting nights for speedcars, with Michael Figlamini in top form, Graham Jones, the unluckiest man in Australia after his disappointment on Friday night, Neville Lance and all those sorts of drivers. I think that the West Australian Speedway public, and of course I know there are a lot of people coming from Sydney to view the speedcar racing over the next three nights, I believe that what will happen in West Australia will certainly keep the tradition well and truly alive. And one name you did miss out was, of course, the Revell name was quite prominent in the early days of the event.
Yes, was indeed, and we'd like to have it prominent again, but it won't be this year, unfortunately. But when we talk about racing, you've actually over on the West Coast there had a plethora of racing, and you mentioned Neville Lance there, who had a great finish, finishing I think fourth overall at Barbagallo Raceway for the NASCAR Thunder over there.
Yes, they raced a very disappointing crowd. I believe it was only about 4,000 people. The promoter, Barry Blake, was looking for 15,000. That wasn't to be. Of course, Paul Stubber, who was a leading sprint car driver in Western Australia, and Neville Lance both can count themselves unfortunately because they were running first and second. They sped through the pit where they were forced to come back into the pits, make a 1 minute penalty stop, then rejoin the race, which consequently Stubber finished in fourth position and Neville Lance finished in Stubber finished second and Neville Lance finished in fourth position. So you can see that the West Australians are very prominent. Barry Blake got barged off the track, and Stephen Darley, I think he's still coming. I mean, he might as well forget his NASCAR career, but certainly the other three guys well and truly showed everyone in Australia that they're very capable drivers.
Yeah, and well, it is very disappointing to see that there was a poorly supported, because I believe there was a lot of publicity building up towards it.
No, it wasn't, actually. Fortunately, we have the same problems in Western Australia that they're having all around Australia. The sport of motor racing, unless, like you say, Tom Watson burns down or there's someone seriously injured, our sport doesn't get much coverage, and NASCAR racing is totally foreign to Australian public. The reason why Bob Jayne's not running as many events as he had at the beginning, because people just don't understand, nor do they have the ready cash to go and be involved in all the forms of motorsport there is. So it makes it difficult.
It does indeed. And I guess we're all getting set now as you build up the two big speed car events you mentioned. Laurie Matthews, of course, a stalwart of Western Australian speed car racing, and is being honoured with this meeting now in its... I think it started in 1990, the Laurie Matthews...
I think it's about the 12th year, Craig. Unfortunately, Laurie lost his life on the way to Parramatta, New South Wales, for the Australian Speedcar title 12 years ago.
Yeah, 1988.
That's right.
Yeah.
The club, along with ourselves, have honoured him as, with this Memorial Classic, or we call it the Laurie Matthews Speedcar Classic. We've actually taken the name Memorial out of it. And it's to honour a man who raced 30 years and won state titles and was really one of the backbones of speedcar racing in the state. And we do each year to make sure that we bring good drivers. We've got people like the Stephen Grahams that have come here before. It's an event that means a lot to West Australians. A lot of guys seem to think that winning a Laurie Matthews is just as good as winning an Australian title. So I hope this year is just as good as winning an Australian Speedcar Grand Prix. The crowd are entertained with some magnificent racing. John Fenton, a former two-time national champion, loaded the cars in Parramatta on Thursday and Friday, and he said, when you see the cars get off the transporter in Perth tomorrow, Connie said, you know, it'll just bring a lump to your throat because the cars look magnificent, and I think that the West Australian public are going to see something pretty special.
Mm-hmm. Now, before you close down, some sprint car shows, and I was wondering if the Solos had their final turn.
I think they have. I think Solos, unfortunately, unless there's a huge influx of interest in that particular speedway, might drop from the landscape as far as speedway is concerned for a long time to come. We haven't got any young men racing speedway now like they used to, and that's making it very difficult for us to promote speedway motorcycles. We won the Super 500 recently, the School of Engineering Masters just recently was won by Victoria's Lee Adams, who I'm tipping to win the world title in 2000. But no, solos are not going. Sidecars are from strength to strength. But a lot of problems with the administration of motorcycling as far as speedway is concerned makes it difficult to see any real bright light at the end of the tunnel at this stage.
Con Migro, thanks for joining us, and we look forward to following the closing days of Claremont Speedway, of course, with the sprint cars closing it up there in late March. So, Colin, a disappointment to see that track go, but some great racing coming up over in the Western States, and we will be keeping you right up to date with that.
Yeah, true enough, Craig. And in international news, kart team boss Roger Penske has said that he will not be running cars in the 2000 Indy 500. Penske had gone as far as ordering two riding Scott chassis to contest the race, but decided instead to sit back and wait for another year and see how things go. As it is, they've got the one car, they've done some testing, but they won't be there in 2000. As it is, it looks like only two kart teams are now likely to enter the race. Walker Racing will run its regular IRL driver, Sarah Fisher, while multiple champion Target Chip Ganassi Racing seems set to enter cars for Juan Montoya and Jimmy Vassa. In another item in terms of USA, Panos and Sanchez, sports car entrepreneurs Don Panos and Ralph Sanchez, have taken control of the BF Goodrich Trans Am Series in the USA. So that really will spice things up there. And as we mentioned a bit earlier on during the program, Marcus Gronholm remains the leader in a Peugeot 206 World Rally car in the Swedish Rally, which is being run just north of Karlstad in Sweden. Icing conditions. Carlos Sainz was forced out of the event with a bad oil pump, and Tommy Mäkinen is sitting within the top five.
And I have been very impressed with how those Toyotas are going without the Toyota factory backing.
That's right, they always go well there. And other news locally for the Qantas Australian Grand Prix down in Melbourne on the 9th, 10th, 11th and 12th of March 2000, Mick Doohan has been chosen to be the flag waver for the Qantas Australian Grand Prix. So it's going to be good to see Mick Doohan down there waving the flag for Australia.
On his way back from Phillip Island, the winner of the Sunday race at Phillip Island, Craig Baird. Craig, congratulations on your first win in the Shell Series.
Yeah, thanks very much. You know, obviously very, very happy about it, and it was just a fantastic result for the first time up.
And, of course, for yourself, your first time out with Stone Brothers Racing, the Pertec team, so really a really big winning day for you.
Yeah, it is. Obviously, you know, Ross and Jimmy Stone put a lot of faith in me, and as well as Ford, to put me in the car for this year, and it's just good to repay them with a win as being a rookie at the first round.
Mm. We've heard from some of the other reports we've heard from Phillip Island that the track and the 10 tyre rules make it very difficult for a lot of the teams to sort of get some consistency out of their tyres. How was it for yourself?
Well, it's like that for everyone, you know. Everyone starts the weekend with 10 tyres, and you know, we all had tyre problems through the weekend, and you know, it was just when it happened and how badly they went. But sure, it was a difficult race because we're all having tyre problems.
Was it a race where a bit of consistency in how you drive, easy on the power, planning your races is what would get you to the front?
Yeah, it was in some ways, but then I had to obviously push hard through the whole race because I started in grid position 9, so I had a lot of cars to pass as well. So that obviously puts extra pressure on the tyres and everything else, but you know, everyone was pushing on as hard as they could.
Yeah, this year we've got quite a few visitors from across the Tasman. We've got Paul Radisic, got yourself there. More Kiwi invasion in the future, maybe?
Yeah, obviously New Zealand, there's a huge amount of young guys there with a lot of talent, and you've also got, you know, like Simon Wills in the Formula Holden, that he's winning both races, and, you know, like Radisic and Murphy, so there's a lot of competitive guys out of New Zealand in the championship.
Mm. Now, for yourself, you've come just off a fairly successful Trans Am Series in New Zealand. Do you believe that that racing you've done over the Christmas New Year break with Trans Am probably helped keep your race eye, race hand in?
Yeah, for sure. In a lot of ways it has, because, you know, last year I didn't race at all, and I went back to New Zealand and did the Trans Am Championship, so it certainly didn't do me any harm. It was just good to get back in a car, and a Trans Am car is very similar to driver's a supercar.
In terms of the tracks that you head off to now, you're across next to Barbagallo Raceway over in West Australia. Have you ever raced over there before?
No, I've never been there before, but I also hadn't been to Phillip Island before. So, you know, it's one of those things I've got to really concentrate on the beginning of the week, and the first test sessions, and try and sort of embed as much information into my brain as possible about learning the tracks and stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of new circuits for me, but no different to this weekend.
Yeah. Obviously, the Stone Brothers do have some data for the car in terms of suspension setup and so on from last year with Jason Bright. Jason and yourself have similar driving styles, so a lot of that can translate over, or do you have a different style that means that you like the car set up differently?
No, we're pretty similar in that, so it's certainly handy to be able to look back on Jason's data from last year, and obviously he did a good job for them last year, so the car was at quite a bit of the best. Certainly using some of his data, but every driver's, you know, we're similar. Every driver, you know, likes his own style, and you do your own thing.
Well, Craig, congratulations once again on your success today down there at Phillip Island, and we'll no doubt be keeping an eye on how you go for the rest of the season.
Many thanks.
Thank you, Craig Baird.
Yes, Craig Baird joining us here on Inside Motorsport. And, well, Garth Tander did take out the victory, and we heard with Neville Woodman a little bit earlier today, a very satisfying victory for the Valvoline team, with Leanne Ferrier taking the Formula Fords out, and gentleman Jim Richards rounding out the winners from Phillip Island this week, Colin.
Yeah, so some good racing down there at Phillip Island. Of course, as they found yesterday, the usual trick down at Phillip Island. Four seasons in one day, but at least it was reasonable for them today. And from here, they head over to Barbagallo Raceway over in Western Australia for their next meeting in a couple of weeks' time. But of course, in the meantime, they've got the sport race for the Formula Fords and the V8s for the Melbourne Grand Prix, which will keep them busy. And that should provide a bit more entertainment for the people down there. So, another good week of motorsport, and we'll be back again next week with the latest news and reports on what's happening around the world in motorsport, including the final results from the Swedish rally and probably a few other bits and pieces of news that's happening. Same time, same place, next week.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.